put that information out there for the rest of the world and all kinds of adults. That way they can just, you know, easily access it.
Well, Avi Shiffman, I want to thank you for being with us. Avi is 17 years old, high school junior at Mercer Island High School, which has closed. It's right outside Seattle, Washington. He developed this most remarkable coronavirus tracker. And finally, Avi, when I was asking you how you pronounce the name of your website, you said you might be changing it. Tell us the website again and what you're thinking of changing it to, why you came up with that name.
Sure. So right now, the website domain is ncov2019.live, which is pretty hard to, you know, even say or remember. So, I mean, that used to be the unofficial name of the virus, but now that it's changed, I'd like to rename the website. I bought a domain called germtracker.com. That way, it's so much easier to remember, and that way I can also use it in the future for more global pandemics. I mean, because, you know, there's only going to be another big thing a couple of years from now, and, you know, I'll be the first one to make a tracker for it.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Avi. Again, all the very, very best to you, to your family, to the community, and thank you for helping the entire community, not only in this country, but around the world. Avi Shiffman, 17-year-old high school junior, speaking to us from Seattle, Washington. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable group of people. I want to thank Julie Crosby and Miriam Barnard. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Libby Rainey, Sam Alcock,
John Hamilton,
Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, Trina Nadura, Tamari Astudio, Adriano Contreras, Maria Terrasena. Special thanks to Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira. Happy birthday to Julia Thomas. And thank you so much to Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is about 20 seconds right there before 8 o'clock, right on the dot. Coming up next, we still got Abe and Joe Talk Radio. You're listening to KBOO Portland, and we are on day 5 of our COVID-19 partial shutdown here at the station, which means that all of our programmers are not here in studio. They are all hosting remotely. That's right, because, hey, just because life is remote these days and everybody is stay at home, or at least those of us who can be at home and are privileged enough to have a home, you know, that doesn't mean that they can't still be volunteering and taking your calls. So make sure to stay tuned for Abe and Joe right after these messages from KBOO.
At KBOO, we think that all communities deserve to be fully informed on the policies and decisions that will impact their lives. And we need your help to make that happen. We're looking for citizen journalists to help collect, report, and broadcast the news. Do you think that there are groups that are underrepresented or marginalized by the mainstream media? Are you aware of social, political, or environmental activities that don't have adequate visibility? Are there important issues in your town or region that aren't getting coverage? This is your chance to give a voice to the voiceless. You don't have to have experience, and you don't have to come into KBOO's Portland studio. You can contribute from wherever you live. If you have some basic writing skills and a desire to get the word out, we want you. Just send an email with your idea and contact information to newsdirector, that's all one word, newsdirector@kboo.fm, and include the words citizen journalist in the subject line, and the news team will contact you. Once again, send that email to newsdirector@kboo.fm.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Portland's Saturday Market. 47 years of American-made arts, crafts, freshly prepared international foods, local artisans, and local music in downtown Portland. Open every Saturday and Sunday in Waterfront Park now through Christmas Eve. Event schedule, vendor information, and more at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
It's crazy.
Abe, I can't see you.
I can't see you either. We should have tried this a long time ago.
Yeah, really. We'd
honestly
both be happier.
Hey, man, this is the Abe and Joe. Oh, go ahead.
No, no, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO, 90.7 on your FM dial. The number, 231-8187, but I don't think we can accept
calls. No, there's no number. No number today.
No number. No number. We're numberless.
Joe and I are doing this program via telephone today and are tying up all the available phone lines because we're just selfish that way. Commentary today will be taken out of necessity in written form. So as always, you can write to us at the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. You can also tweet at us at HonestAbe72.
I'm going to interrupt you real quick.
Today.
Board up, interrupting here. We do have one open phone line. I'm going to leave it up to Abe and Joe. So don't just start calling. I'm going to leave it up to Abe and Joe. But just to let you know, you guys are, here's the technical radio behind the scenes. You guys are all on one pot. So we have one pot open for our callers. If you guys want to be taking the calls, and I'm ready to take your calls, if that's what our dear remote host would like, so just let me know.
I don't even know what a pod is.
I think we are nothing. We are nothing without our callers.
Yeah, really. Well, we're not much without our callers, I would say. Hey, so what we're going to talk about today, if I understand our plan, is the virus.
Yeah, it has essentially taken over economic and social and political life here in the Portland area. So, you know, that's what all of us are experiencing right now in one form or another. So I think it'll be helpful to talk about what we know, talk about what we don't know, hear from people about what they're experiencing. Let's give people an opportunity to, you know, to talk about how this has impacted their lives and how they plan to go forward.
I think that's all well and good, but I want to vent a little bit. I really
do. Oh, yeah, I think we'll have time for that as well.
Yeah.
Why don't start there, Joe? Why don't you vent away there?
Look, I watched the President of the United States several times in the onslaught of this terrible virus, incompetent, actually stupid, kind of psychotic, highly defensive, and inappropriate. And it became really clear to me that we don't have any kind of trustworthy leadership at the top. Fortunately, we do have some good scientists that are part of the structure of the system. But other than that, and he's really actually saying this, the states are on their own.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, he said to the collected governors of the United States on the conference call that, you know, they should do their best to find some ventilators. Good luck, y'all.
Yeah, good luck. There's no ventilators. There's very few. They're starting to make them. And they can come from somewhere else, maybe. And, of course, the problem is if you think you might have been exposed to the disease, you can't get a test. At least I don't think you can. Can you?
From everything I've heard here in Oregon, no, I could not tell you right now if you feel you have been exposed to the coronavirus and are experiencing symptoms. I don't know where to tell you to go get a test, and I don't think anybody else has that answer either.
I think it's really... go ahead.
Here's the drawback of remote talk shows.
We can't see each other.
I know. So you mentioned the testing. That's a very important factor here. And if you can at least pause your rant for a second, I want to try and put this in some sort of
perspective. I can sell my rant on the market, you know.
All right, indeed. All right, so I've been keeping a pretty close eye on this, and I've been comparing, for example, the daily progression of new cases in the United States, seeing those results plotted on a curve, comparing that curve to some of the other countries who have experienced mass levels of infection, which is growing all the time. And one thing is really standing out to me, two things, actually. First of all, if you compare the growth of new cases in China, where the virus first arose, and later in South Korea, you can see a distinctive pattern emerge. This is the flattening the curve concept that people have been talking about far and wide, meaning if we practice the appropriate hygienic practices and social distancing protocols, then we can flatten that growth curve of the new cases and eventually see the number of new cases drop to zero when the virus has run its course. That's the whole point of everything we've been told to do, right?
Right.
Joe, flatten the curve. Okay.
Yes.
Now, you can see when you consult this data how this has worked in China, especially. Now, we should bear in mind that the sorts of tactics that China has been able to employ are really only possible in a totalitarian state like that. But they seem to have had a pretty dramatic effect. We're looking at... March 1st was the last day in China that more than 200 new cases were reported. That was 16 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as of the 15th, it had still yet to pass 81,000 total cases. So it's still adding new cases each day, but it's down to a bare trickle compared to almost every place else in the world, except for South Korea, which is a free society like ours, not quite, you know, not exactly. It's not a direct apples-to-apples comparison, but they have also been able to slow down the number of new infections that is showing up. So the evidence there is positive that if we do these things, it will have a measurable effect on the spread of the virus and the eventual decline and passing away of the virus over time. Now, I mentioned that was one of the things that I had my eye on. The other thing is the curve in Italy. Now, the new case curve in Italy is the one that we resemble most closely. And what's happened there is that Italy seemed to have done, much like we are doing here, doing what they could to treat the people with new cases, trying to socially distance and isolate people they knew to be infected. But eventually they reached a point where they had not taken enough preemptive action, and they were simply overwhelmed with the number of new cases. And that's the situation that they are still in today, with an explosion of new infections almost every day.
Well, there's another factor in Italy, which is that they live longer than Americans. On the average, at least 4 years longer, which means there are more elderly in their population.
And yeah, this is true.
The elderly are much more likely to die from this thing.
Yeah, this is very true. Yeah. Italy's population tended to skew older, even within the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right to point that out, and that will have a bearing, I think, on how many people we can expect to see die here in the United States. And I apologize if that is an insensitive comment for many of you out there, but I don't think it serves any of us to speak about this in anything less than very stark terms.
Are
going to die from this virus.
I think the language of epidemiology is the appropriate language for this situation. Right. And I'm going to add something else that may offend some people. Crowds are dangerous in this context. Mm-hmm. And what happened in South Korea was this massive, I believe, Christian sect holding meetings where people were just right next to each other in huge numbers. And that was the point in South Korea where the disease really took off.
Yeah, indeed. And they're actually able to trace it back to this, to one subject who, by attending a couple of religious services, was able to spread the virus even farther.
Yeah.
So there we have a case where Korea appeared to be doing the right thing and continued to do the right thing, but because somebody decided they needed to go mingle with a bunch of people, if they wrecked it for everybody. One person ruined it for everybody. So that's what we need to bear in mind here. Please do not take this lightly. Do not be cavalier about your habits. Please keep your distance from people. Avoid crowds. Avoid confined spaces with other people. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Do all these things that you've been hearing drummed into your head for the last 2 or 3 weeks. It is vitally important that you do this.
And ignore the guy at the top of the government.
Yeah, pay absolutely no attention to the president. He's not going to say anything that's going to help you right now. You're right, Joe. As we've learned more and more about how he has actually behaved since this all began, it's staggering. He denied the World Health Organization's offer of several thousand testing kits when this thing first hit. It just goes on and on and on.
Well, the problem for him, is not the problem for the rest of us. His whole focus is on himself, as always, and on his getting reelected. And he is absolutely, totally selfish. He's upset. The big thing he's upset about is that because of this, the stock market has crashed. And he doesn't
care about us.
He doesn't care about anybody.
I know it's okay. I'm fine.
What?
I think we're hearing some extraneous audio from someplace or other.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Hey,
that's all. Hello.
Oh, should I be talking or are you guys still talking?
No.
That's Jenna accidentally putting your caller on the wrong line. Sorry, everybody. So, hey, Abe and Joe, guess what? You have a caller. They're waiting.
Yes.
There you go.
Go ahead, caller.
All right.
Go ahead,
this is Larry. This is Larry. I just got a quick anecdote. I'm a lucky guy with insurance. I was feeling terrible over the weekend. I had been around a guy who had been up to Seattle several times in the last 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So I go to the Kaiser Permanente website. They got a little self-exam, go through 50 little questions, do a little self-exam of my tonsils and this sort of thing, send it in. A couple hours later, I get a reply from the doctor, says, the symptoms you indicate here are not symptoms of coronavirus. Looks like you got upper respiratory infection, just stay home and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, the internet is cool, and it's just there's a lot of ways we could deal with this. But obviously, like you guys are saying, our government is out to lunch. It's unbelievable. So, anyway, well, glad to hear you're all still going, and glad we have KBOO.
Well, thank you very
much. Hey, man, stay well. I hope it turns out just to be a run of the mill infection there for you.
Yeah, no, I'm good right now. Everything's cool. So,
oh, good.
Anyway.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. God bless
hey,
America.
For calling.
Thanks, man. Okay, I'm going to warn people who are listening. There's things like that. I'm going to warn people that this is a distance phone connection. I can't see Abe. Abe can't see me. Talk about social distance. Wow.
Yeah, this is very true. This is very true, but we're going to get through the best we can, and we hope that you'll bear with us.
Sure, and besides, chaos is good, right?
Well, in some situations it is, yes. You mentioned, Joe, observing the President of the United States over the past week or so. He's given a couple of press conferences, the first of which is his national address to the people from the Oval Office, was absolutely frightening. And I got to tell you, that's when I really noticed this palpable shift in public mood, was during and immediately after the address from the President of the United States, which is supposed to have exactly the opposite effect, right? That seems to be when everybody went, oh, boy.
Well,
and that's when it really started to feel weird.
It literally caused the stock market to crash.
Yes, it literally did. We've had some follow-up press events, one in which Trump was surrounded by captains of industry and proceeded to shake all of their hands on national TV. Did you see that?
I saw that. I thought, boy, those guys, even though they're rich and so on, are really being foolish.
Yeah. Yes. So his second press event regarding this this epidemic that is ripping through his population, his second national press appearance appeared to be largely devoted to reassuring investors about the health of the market. And it was
each time he does that, the market gets worse. Gosh.
Yeah, each time he does that, the market gets worse. This is when he dodged a question from a reporter from the PBS NewsHour who asked him about the federal government's response to this, and he characterized that as a nasty question and went on to describe the government's response in glowing terms.
Well,
and then
called...
just a couple of...
Go ahead. Hard for us to make sure we're not stepping on each other's words, but he actually called the governor of Washington a snake. And Washington
yes,
is distinguished by being very responsible. And the government there is doing everything that it possibly can.
Yeah, I think we have to give plaudits where they're due. Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington, has been, compared to the president, incredibly proactive when dealing with this. But even still, despite their heroic efforts, our overall response was not as swift nor as decisive as it needed to be. And again, a lot of that is because we simply can't take the same sorts of measures that totalitarian governments are able to take. I'm not advocating that we become a totalitarian regime.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. So then the president's third national press event regarding this contagion, he was asked to rate the federal government's response to this, and he said it was perfect, 10 out of 10.
Well, it's very much like his perfect call in the situation in the European theater, as it were.
Right. So meanwhile, everyone has turned their hopes to their state and local governments, to hoping that they will implement the right sorts of policies. And that appears to be happening, finally. Bars and restaurants have been closed except for takeout service here in Oregon. The governor has advised that no public gatherings in excess of to 10 people. In fact, you're best to avoid public gatherings altogether. And I suspect that sometime in the not-too-distant future, we're going to get the everybody shelter at home directive.
Well, I actually have a question, and maybe somebody out there, this is a nice call-in opportunity. What's with the panic buying of toilet paper?
I don't know. I think people are thinking about, what do I need for a potential long haul at home? And they're thinking, I think, in terms of things like, when we get 6 inches of snow, and Portland shuts down.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the sort of thing they're envisioning. It's just an aspect of people's concern making itself known, and I don't think we ought to make too much of it, really.
Oh, I don't know. I kind of like
people buy extra toilet paper, so be it.
I think it's both bizarre, three things: bizarre, funny, and sad.
Hey, Abe and Joe, just want to let you know that you got a caller on the line. I'm not sure if he's there to talk about toilet paper, but you got Brian as your next caller.
Well, we can drop toilet paper. Ha, ha, ha. Go ahead.
Can.
Let's get our caller.
Hi, Brian.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay,
what's good.
I had a question I've been wanting to ask somebody, and you guys are the most obvious one. When talking about the testing, that they did not accept the WHO's offers of all those tests.
That's right.
It seems to me that most things in Trump world, you follow the money. There must be dollar signs somewhere. Like somebody was bound to make a lot of money on developing their own test, which of course they screwed up the first version. Have we figured out who's behind the testing that is going to be set up? Is Kushner behind it or something?
Let me answer you. There are questions of that sort. At this time, in this situation, it's not real useful to follow the money. It's unusual in that we really need to solve the immediate problem of getting testing out and so on. But the policy decision not to accept international help is typical of this administration. Remember, we've walked out on the climate agenda. We've walked out on almost any international effort under the leadership of Donald Trump. And this has really, for a lot of people, you don't see the effect, but this is an example of where it really has a profound effect on everybody's life.
And it does seem that we shouldn't just drop the question right now because it's making it easier to get swept under the rug so we can't, act in accordance in the future. I mean, if he just keeps doing this, it's just hurting everybody. And what I wanted to say was that in that press conference, he totally downplayed his testing. He's like, okay, so I went and got the test because people were sort of bugging me to do it. And then Pence said, oh, no, I haven't been tested, but I'm checking my temperature every morning, and the doctors, we're watching it. He's just, that's just for visuals, right? They just don't want to let anybody know that testing really is important. The next thing I heard on the radio was another country, the leader saying, we are making testing a priority. So...
Well, I'm going to take a moment here to explain what I think we all probably know, but I want to make sure everybody understands it. A disease like this progresses in a predictable curve, unless it's blocked by social isolation and hopefully a cure. So if we look at the curve right now, our curve pretty much mimics that which Italy experienced. And there are differences, of course. But if we allow things to go as they've been going under this administration, and I'm not saying that's going to have to happen, but if we allow that, we will get to the place where there's going to be a lot of people dying and a lot of people sick. And in the end, the disease will continue on for a lot longer period of time. Already we understand that in the natural course of things, it'll probably be into midsummer before it's as a plague over.
And isn't testing a vital part of being able to control this for people?
Oh, absolutely, because yes. There are two things we know that will be very helpful. There's a third thing, but it's coming down the pike probably a year from now. That's a vaccine. But the two things are social isolation in general and testing in particular. And these are both things that can be done right now. We have the ability to do these. but we don't have the clear direction that I would expect from a great leader or even a decent leader of the government of the United States.
Yeah. Wow.
And we don't even have the tests yet.
Thank you very much for the discussion, and thanks to Cable for keeping things going like they have.
Sure. And I think I better emphasize that last word. Despite the fact that there was plenty of warning, despite the fact that there's even money to be made, the tests are not available in general. Are you there, Ed?
Yes, that is the case. As we said earlier, I couldn't tell you where to go right now if you believed that you were experienced symptoms of coronavirus.
Well, I've heard of people driving up to Washington to find a testing opportunity.
Yeah, I've heard of that as well. But that is a pretty risky choice.
Well,
I think I would advise people not to do that if at all possible. On the subject of testing, right now it's absolutely critical that the United States is able to ramp up its capacity to test people for infection by the coronavirus. We're talking about the efficacy of social isolation. Social isolation, social distancing becomes far more effective if we actually know we're dealing with people who are infected. Without absent testing, based on the reading I've been doing, epidemiologists estimate that anywhere from out there in the world, in the United States, there are anywhere from 5 to 10 times as many cases of coronavirus as have been confirmed by testing. That is a big, big variable. That means there's a lot of people moving around, doing their thing, even when they're following social distancing protocols, who don't know that they're infected and are endangering the people that they are associating with as they isolate themselves.
Yeah, and I want to be
their families, their loved ones.
I want to be very clear. It's not that people are being evil or even extremely selfish. They're just going about their daily lives.
Right, because we have no way of knowing. We have no way of knowing, and that is both maddening, on a personal level, and incredibly frustrating on a governmental and policy level. This is the most basic of responses that needed to happen, and it has not happened. It still is not where it needs to be. And so when you hear left-wing frustration with the president and his response, yes, some of it is rooted in tribalism and the fact that we tend to criticize Trump no matter what. But in this case, you can draw a straight line from some of his decisions, even the ones he took far in advance of this outbreak, like, for example, dissolving the pandemic response team that Obama had put in place.
Right.
You
and
know,
that was
all
put
of these
in place
things.
after several indications of the need for it.
Indeed. Things like cutting the funding for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, all of these things that put us on a less ready footing to deal with something like this when it happens. This is the consequence of the larger conservative philosophy to bleed government dry. Yeah, you can cut spending across all sorts of spheres of government, but something will come along like this. The echoes between this incident and Katrina should not be overlooked because they have, to a very large extent, very similar antecedents, and that was disinvestment in readiness and preparedness.
Yeah, and I think I'm torn between the focus on this evil man who has gotten to be president of the United States by pure accident, never voted on by a majority of the people, one might add, and his egotistical approach to everything, as in, how am I doing? That's his question. How am I doing? Not how are we doing, and what else can I do to help America? It's all about him, and he's obviously very concerned. He makes these bizarre press releases, press events, which immediately cause smart people in markets, and even not so smart people in markets, to say, "Oh hell, I'm going to sell stock. I'm going to get the hell out of this." And that's what he's doing.
Yeah, agreed. he's realized for a long time, I think, that a robust economy and good employment numbers were really what was propping up his presidency. And if you view the whole situation through that lens, suddenly his reactions make a little more sense. He only really freaked out about this when it started endangering the market, because he realizes that's really all he has. But listen, we've got a caller. Theodore is a registered nurse and theoretically in the thick of things. Theodore, good morning.
Yeah, I'm not in the thick of things because I do other things now. And
okay, well,
what?
That's safer for you. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, it's safer for me. I mean, one of the things that I would like to address with you guys, because I think you are actually talking a lot of falsehoods.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, please.
The one thing is, why is it the national government, when we're 3,500 miles away from D.C., why is it their complete responsibility to organize action in California, Oregon, and Washington? Here's a case in point. I was on KXL the other day, on a Monday before last, and I got shut down. But the government, if they were actually smart in Oregon and Washington to reassure people, they would have started organizing these event tents so that you can have capacity expansion for med-surg and ICU floors, and you start organizing your nurses that you're going to get either unemployed people or agency nurses, and you're going to start training them on how to use their equipment, how to maintain a ventilator. In other words, I'm not saying they're these folks, because we're going to have a surge. We're seeing a surge, right? I call it a tidal wave, and it's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Okay, it's going to crest probably, and that means these hospitals are only run with about a 10% empty capacity, so they're 90% full all the time. So if you get a 8x or 800% surge, the problem is, what do you have? You have overwhelmed, right? You're overwhelmed.
Yeah. Well, let me respond to a little bit of that.
States could do
in one way. You're correct. That is, the local level is more panicked and perhaps less rational than it could be. But here's the thing: the Army Corps of Engineers has tents, and there are large numbers of very competent people who could be dispatched to hotspots. That's not happening with this government. And also, there really are limits. Hospitals in this country, because of the kind of health care we deliver, it's not a system of benefit to the people. It's a system of benefit to corporations. That's why we have such limited amounts of services. If we had, in fact, developed a national health plan, we would be in much better shape to deal with this. Now,
well, I don't know about that.
Well,
Kate Brown.
I see what's happening in France. I see what's happening in Germany.
I think Kate Brown is incompetent, and I think Inslee is too. Here's another major point that I think is a myth, and it's very likely that we're going to get taught hard on this, and that is, in France right now, half of all of the cases are under 40. So this isn't necessarily an older person's disease.
Well, I agree with you. It is naive and perhaps mistaken to say, hey, it's just the old people. The difference is that the old people are less able to deal with the disease than younger people.
Of course. But there might be, you know, when I was in Italy, there were a lot of smokers. Maybe there's a lot of people with, damaged lungs.
Well, sure.
A lot of people smoke in France, too. So when you're, that's one thing we've got going for us around here is most people don't smoke anymore. There are a lot of vapors, I guess, but most people don't smoke, so you're not doing a bunch of damage.
Well,
I'm not sure, but
I
wouldn't.
Right.
I wouldn't be arrogant if I were a guy out here or Joe or Jane out here in Portland, Oregon, walking around, and you're 25 years old. I wouldn't be arrogant about, this is just for people that are over 65.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right about that.
Well, but there seems to be this thing about it, but I think we've got to get Kate Brown and we've got to get Inslee. You've got to ramp up this capacity, get your nurses, get your nurse practitioners, your PAs and your physicians, including the retired people that, are 6 years out of retirement or something, if they're willing to help. But you got to get in these parking lots, either outside of hospitals or at your Walmart or a closed mall or something like that. You got to have an ability to take this excess capacity and get people give them a shot.
No, I think you're right. I think there's two things, well, many things going on, but the response in, particularly in Washington, but also in Oregon, remember Oregon is the poor cousin to Washington in terms of both population and money, but you got to realize that in order to ramp up what you're talking about, you have to have a very strong tradition and a very strong capability of organizing in that way. Right now, that doesn't exist hardly anywhere. California is doing a better job than we are. Washington is doing a better job than we are. But so far, there hasn't been that ability to marshal.
Well, I know that I could probably, with a team of three people, book every event tent and have them get them delivered for 2 months, and the feds are going to print money to pay for it because it's a national disaster, right? So
well,
the money
that's
is not
that's
an object.
Not evident.
And it's only
yeah,
a half
I, you know, okay.
What?
I hear you criticizing the response here, the local response. And
of
that,
course.
And I think those responses are absolutely worthy of criticism. In comparison to the president, though, they look enlightened. Listen, thank you for the call.
I
want to give some others an opportunity this morning, I think.
I think that's good,
but before we do that, I want to address a couple of points that Theodore brought up, and that is why do we feel here in Oregon and Washington, California, that we ought to depend utterly upon the federal government for the response to this? Why should we not respond locally? Well, the answer to that is no. Of course, we don't depend utterly on the federal government. Of course, we marshal our resources and our human capabilities locally. But listen, in situations like this, there's such a tone that is set from the very top that people take their cues from what the president of the United States does and says, for better or for worse. So Theodore was talking about young people feeling cavalier about this, that they're not going to get infected. Well, the president of the United States said on national television, if you're a young person, don't worry about it, you're going to be fine. So the cues, for better or for worse, are taken from the president of the United States. And virtually every opportunity, he has said and done the wrong thing. Here's another example of what I'm talking about. Had the president decided to declare a national emergency, which is a real thing, that's not just rhetoric. When a national emergency is declared, things happen. Most notably, resources are made available to be applied directly where they're needed. So had the president weeks ago declared a national emergency, we could have mobilized the Department of Defense to create mobile hospital space, which is one of the things that they're very good at, and FEMA also to do the same thing. Another thing that they are good at. The president just a couple of days ago declared a national emergency, which means that those mobilizations are just now getting underway at a point when we needed this capacity to be online. Because as Theodore mentioned, we are looking at a surge in the next 2 or 3 weeks here in the Pacific Northwest, and our healthcare infrastructure is going to be overwhelmed. And I want to give you another example of this. A good friend of mine is a nurse in the emergency department at a major hospital here in Portland, and he told me that he and the rest of the people in his department are preparing for a tsunami. And he went on to say that this is going to be the biggest challenge of his career, coping with this and the strain that it's going to put on our system. So should we depend on what the federal government does? No, we should absolutely do everything we can here at the state and local level, but we would be remiss if we didn't point out the many ways that the federal government has failed all of us in its response to this epidemic.
And it's not the federal government as a collective, it's the administration at the top.
It's the administration at the top. Yeah, you're right, because we hear other people, smart people, educated people, who are in their positions because they're competent, you know, directly contradicting the president, sometimes on the same stage with the president, you know, directly contradicting what he just said. Anthony Fauci, the epidemiologist, that happened at least once that I can recall in the last week.
And he's trying
he said,
to be polite,
you know,
but it, you know, it's
he's
obvious.
Trying to be polite. Man. Let's go to Harry. Harry, you're next. Good morning.
Hey, greetings, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. During the government, the governor's speech, they mentioned one important number. They're saying that by May, there'll be 75,000 cases here in the state of Oregon. That's why she did all the things that she did by closing the schools and everything else to try to stop this wave that is coming, you know. And and what Trump did, the Trumpists are part of the media. They believe Trump, everything he said, up until he said it was an emergency. There, a poll was done that 68% of Democrats believe that this virus should be held, that should be taken care of and taken seriously. Only 34% of Republicans.
Wow, you mean it has a political dimension at that strength?
Yes, everyone, they believe Trump so much, whatever he says. And so it's that bad. In fact, the governor of Oklahoma, a red state, said, no, you should be able to go out and eat anytime you want to, or this is before Trump did declare it an emergency. But this Oklahoma governor was saying that, yeah, hey, you can go out and eat. It shouldn't stop you from doing anything. And so it's obviously what blue states, which is Oregon, Washington, and California, versus what are the other red states are doing, or do they care, you know?
Well,
without tests, we don't know.
I think there's part of the bifurcation of the culture is there are a huge number of people who believe in all kinds of mythic notions about America. One of those mythic notions, by the way, is that we were always clean in a political moral sense from the start of our country. And of course, that is mythology. We were a culture that believed in murdering the local people, absolutely, and we were a culture that believed, for example, in slavery, and we're a culture that after the turn of the century, wouldn't let women vote. So, you know, we are not an exemplar, except that we were the first republic to attempt a democratic, that small d, culture.
Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite podcasts is the David Pakman Show. And I suggest everyone look at yesterday's David Pakman Show. They even show a film of Trump when they interviewed him. Why did you cut the pandemic response team? And he said, no, this is all in film, too, that, we're trying to save our government some money. These people just sit around doing nothing. And it has on film. I mean, hopefully the Democratic Party will take all this and make good advertisements to remind people that a lot of this stuff is directly Trump. Well, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Hey,
for the
thanks,
call.
Harry. Stay well, man. Stay safe out there.
Yeah, and I want to repeat. Listen. I want to repeat the obvious because it can't be said. It really can't be said too often. Social isolation is the appropriate response to this pandemic. It is the easiest way, not the most pleasant perhaps, but the easiest way in the absence of a vaccine to limit this incredible pandemic.
Yeah, indeed, it's really that and good hygienic practices are the only things we can do at this point. I want to talk a little more about this, the disconnect between federal response to this on the one hand and the state and local response on the other, particularly how it affects the speed at which local officials are able to make decisions and the decisions that they feel comfortable making. And here's what I mean. The decision that Kate Brown made yesterday to shut down bars and restaurants, for example, that's the sort of decision that an elected official hates to ever have to be in a position to make, right? If you talk about some of the more venal reasons why, you know, that's going to make you very unpopular and probably ding your chances at reelection on a very superficial level. On a deeper level, somebody like a governor of a state is aware of the consequences of that decision, that it means that a lot of these small businesses are going to shut their doors and never again open them, that a lot of people are going to be out of work with no replacement for their income stream, that this is a hardship simply beyond denying people the ability to go down to the pub and have a pint. This is a hardship on a lot of people. Now, if the federal government, led by the president, had set out at the outset to to guarantee paid time off for anybody whose job was affected by the coronavirus. How much easier then does it become for someone like Kate Brown to make that call? It becomes almost infinitely easier because you know the people that you are going to temporarily put out of work or temporarily put out of business are not going to permanently be there. That's another way, and a really, really important way, that the federal government has fallen down on the job here. Now, I want to dig into this a little more because I think it's really important. Now, there's a bill that's going to be voted upon in the Senate, I believe, today, because I guess it was very important for Mitch McConnell to have a three-day weekend this last weekend. It is a compromise bill that has come out of the House guaranteeing sick time compensation for some employees. Now, as you might imagine, it's got Republican fingerprints all over it because it exempts companies with 500 or more workers, who are some of the biggest employees in the country. So Walmart's not going to be forced to pay sick leave. McDonald's is not going to be forced to pay sick leave, and on and on and on. So this bill is not enough, and it's not enough because the same old choir is singing in the Senate that we can't force businesses to endure this sort of hardship. We're going to make sure that all of this falls directly on the shoulders of working people. This is the same old capitalist song and dance, except now it's in a real-time emergency and people are going to suffer as a result. This, you know, as you might be able to tell from the tone of my voice, this has really got me angry. I mean, now is the time. I mean, if there was ever a time in the United States to not be tight-fisted, this is it. People need to get paid, not just so that they can make their own ends meet, because money needs to keep circulating in the economy. I mean, look at these restaurants that have been cut down to takeout only, right? It might make the difference between long-term success and failure if you're able to sit at home and order some takeout Chinese food, and you're able to make that order because you know that you're going to have at least some income coming in because the federal government has acted on your behalf. They have not. This is the sort of chain of events that is tripped off when we have a failure of leadership like this at a central level, at the very top levels. We are going to be struggling to deal with the after effects of this for a long, long time. And it could have all been made much easier if Mitch McConnell had just been willing to do the right thing.
Yeah, I don't want to veer into the Mitch McConnell phenomenon. You know, he's called for all federal judges who are older to resign so that he can appoint some neo-fascist judges.
Yes, and you just did veer into the Mitch McConnell.
it's irresistible, and I apologize.
Yeah. But these are the things we need to talk about, and these are the things we need to understand, you know, and have crystallized going forward, and these need to be the things we demand of future generations of leadership. No elected official should be able to be so derelict in their duties as what we are witnessing right at this very moment. I mean, if we're talking about what the federal government can do, I mean, this is universal basic income is an idea whose time has come, right? Even people like Mitt Romney are saying, get $1,000 a month in the hands of every adult American until this thing is over. Yeah, that is a brilliant idea. That's a very expensive idea, but I think it's one we'll be glad we took. It's a choice we'll be glad we made in the long term, but it's not going to happen. Not under these conditions.
Well, that's true. And I think that what we are operating with is a 19th century capitalist model in a 21st century world. And this is not, but I want to make this clear, this is not about socialism like China or other countries of that ilk. This is about social democracy. Unfortunately, that term has been warped and used in a very unclear way in the current electoral process. But if you look at Northern Europe, and including really France, if you look at the way in which those societies operate for the benefit of their people while being capitalist, it's clear that this all can work together. That's not what's happening in the United States.
No, not at all. And we strive for accuracy and we strive for honesty on this program. We don't always hit those marks.
No.
But we need to be very clear about what's in front of us here. Things are going to get worse before they get better. I'm not saying that to be a gloom and doomer. I'm not saying that to rain on anybody's parade. We all need to understand this. We all need to act accordingly. And we can all, even as we're isolating ourselves, put pressure on our elected officials to do the right thing in a timely manner. this is going to be a challenge. I think I'm correct in saying that the vast majority of us have never lived through anything like this.
Well, I think that's true in this situation. Also, here's a nice opportunity to read a book or even to watch television. It's a nice alternative to the usual phenomena of crowded behavior in a bar or in a restaurant or whatever.
Yeah, indeed. There's ways to cope, really. And with today's entertainment technology, if you can't find a way to divert yourself for a few days at home, I don't know what to tell you.
Really?
Yeah, let's go back to the phones. James is next. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
Well, yeah, I appreciate your little rant, mutual rant about politics in Washington, and I'm a little pleased to hear the two scions of progressive status quo seemingly talking about a new form of leadership, which kind of leans towards a particular candidate that maybe shall go unnamed. Because I'd much rather hear Joe continue his rant about toilet paper, because it is important. If you've been to the grocery stores lately, people are hoarding. And without the federal government looking after us, and some would argue, as earlier callers have, that our state government isn't doing a good job of looking after us, we're on our own. And if we are told to stay in our homes and have to go out to get groceries to stay at home, why are people doing this? It's not just toilet paper. I went to the co-op yesterday, and there was no tofu. People are hoarding, and it's crazy, and it's selfish, and it's wrong, and we need to stop it.
Well, it's interesting.
No, I agree.
It's interesting you bring that up. During World War II, we had rationing, and we had a very patriotic demand on people that they not hoard. There's nothing like that in our culture right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about, I use toilet paper because I think it's a funny example, and a crude one. But it's not just toilet paper. It's true. I was at a store just yesterday, and it's amazing what people are buying in large amounts.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree. I mean, that leadership that we're all craving right now, I mean, I think that's an essential component of that leadership, to tell everybody to be calm, to give them a sense that things are going to be okay and that we don't need to panic. We can get through this. We can do this. But we got to...
Agreed.
We can't be selfish about it. We got to look out for everyone, the whole community, not individuals. Like, there's no reason for your freezer to be full of meat right now or to be hoarding, I mean, essential items, bread, potatoes, vegetables. It's just insane. It's got to stop.
No, I agree. I think that it's not unreasonable to store things. The tradition that in the Mormon faith of having food to last for a certain amount of time is not a bad tradition. But the panic that's coming out of this is absurd. I watched in a supermarket the other day, people just buying so much non-essential stuff in fear that will now not be available. And it's not a good way of dealing with a thing. And it's very selfish. And in the end, it's self-defeating, because it puts enormous pressure on the supply system, and it ties things up, and in the end, it creates further panic, and it reinforces a very negative attitude toward the future.
Well, I think we could, and we can blame our leadership for not explaining what they're talking about, like this thing that's going on down in California now, where you're sheltering in place. That does not mean that you cannot go out and get groceries.
No, and it doesn't mean you can't take a walk in the neighborhood without being close to people.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's part of this. People hear this shelter in place and they think, oh my God, I'm going to have to spend 3 weeks in my home all by myself and I can't go out at all. But that's not what it is. There's no clarity about what that is. And people are freaking out when they hear that word.
Probably people who are reaching that conclusion when they don't need to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to also say that we're seeing communities of faith and social organizations rise to the occasion in many cases. There are people doing the right thing, and there are good instructions. But to separate that out from the incredible, I don't know how to call it, this right-wing faith-based nonsense, it's very difficult. People really have bought into a woo-woo model, and it's what, like 30% of the population, and it's very scary. It doesn't usually matter, but this is a case where it really does.
Yeah. Well,
hey, listen, thanks for your help. James, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate your comments. Thanks for keeping us honest.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're going to, I think, wrap up here because we're getting close to the end of our time.
Are we?
Yeah, we are. We got about 7 minutes left. There's something I want to mention because it's really critically important as we move through these next couple of weeks. It's really interesting that in times of crisis that conservatives suddenly get on the bandwagon in terms of government stimulus. but whenever there's somebody, say a black dude in the presidency who wants to rescue the economy, all of a sudden they're tight-fisted. But the president, we have learned, is going to go to Congress to ask for more than $800 billion in economic stimulus to address the coronavirus problem. Now, here's where the devil is in the details. $500 billion of that he's going to ask for in the form of payroll tax cuts. This is snake oil. I got to tell you this right now, people. If you're listening, if you're at home, if you're not going to work, you got time on your hands, now's the time to write not just your elected representatives, but everybody you can possibly think of. Because here's why. Why is a payroll tax cut a bad idea? First of all, does nothing to help those people who are not working. Secondly, how do you think Medicare and Social Security are paid for? They're paid for by payroll taxes. This is a backdoor attempt to cut cherished social insurance programs in the midst of a crisis. It is unconscionable, it is reckless, it is stupid, and it needs to be stopped.
And I'm sorry.
Okay, the remainder of this $800 billion that the president is asking for, he's asking for $250 billion in small business association loans, probably a good idea to keep businesses afloat while they have to close their doors, and then $58 billion to bail out the airlines, which I contend is another waste of money at this time. But listen, here's what's not in the president's request. It does not request that Congress puts money directly in the hands of the Americans, and it does not request that Congress makes sure people continue to get paid even as they're forced to stay away from work. This is a disastrous plan, and it needs to be opposed by everybody who has a voice right now.
And I want to add something else. When you have a huge homeless population, which we certainly do, you have a pool of people who are out of necessity forced to live close to each other, forced to go to shelters and so on. And that is a place where this thing can really blossom. Now, I don't want to turn people into angry mobs against the homeless. That's stupid. I do want to point out that the services that should be available, that should be actually coming out of the federal government, are totally lacking. And it's outrageous.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, completely lacking. And they were never sufficient here at the state and local level, even before this outbreak.
Right.
So one thing that this is laying clear, and I hope that all Americans are noticing this, is that we had some really deep and pressing underlying structural problems in our society that have been laid bare, that have been exposed by this outbreak and by our response to it. And I sincerely hope that on the far side of this, we are ready to embrace some policies that up to this point have been dismissed as radical or unfairly branded as socialist, because we are not ready for this. We are not ready for this, and we are not going to be ready for the next one unless we start doing things in a fundamentally different way.
And I getting a little intellectual here, there's lots of great writing, particularly existentialist writing, that talks about exactly this, plague and the consequence of it, when it lays bare the failings of human society.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Boy, that was a big silence. Anyway, I really do hope that people do follow the basics of this thing. That they really do, the term they're using now is shelter in place, but, you know, hang out at home, take walks, but keep social distance. Be responsible in your own life, and also, if you have children, help them to understand not to be afraid, but to understand this kind of change and the necessity for it during the period of time when this plague is upon us.
Indeed. Shelley has written in to say that Street Roots, the homeless issues newspaper, is trying to address the homeless issues locally. So now might also be a good time, if you're able, to throw a little money towards Street Roots to help them with those efforts.
Well, yeah, this is a time, in fact, when charitable giving that directs itself toward the poor is very important. This is a time to be generous in your own interest.
Yeah, indeed. You know, and there are things you can do for your neighbors, even while observing proper social distancing protocols. If you have elderly neighbors and they need someone to make a grocery run, this is something you can do without exposing yourself to undue risk, if you do it carefully. These are the things you can do. This is a time when, you know, distancing strains the social fabric. And so these small gestures, these little things we can do to stay connected to each other, I think that's going to help us all get through this as well. So look for opportunities in your neighborhood to help out in a safe way.
And I want to add a little note of positivity, since I seem to be a gloom and doomer these days. It is survivable. This is something that we can learn from, to come together as a nation, to share and to work together to solve an enormous problem. The opposite of that, a kind of selfish response, which is foolish and short-sighted and will lead to even more problems with this plague, is not appropriate. This is a time for generosity on a lot of different levels, as well as sensible understandings of the things you need to do when you have a plague. And I like calling it a plague, because that's what it is.
Yeah, there's something about that word that really resonates, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it's a plague.
Yeah, it is a plague. So I think we are pretty much out of time here. Before we sign off, though, I really would like to thank Jenna, who is in the studio right now, running the board, and everybody else who has helped keep KBOO going through this difficult time. We really appreciate your efforts.
Yeah, you know, I was feeling very depressed, but this solution, while far from our perfect model, is good, and I think we're probably going to have to do it for a few weeks ahead. So I want to thank people at KBOO for rising to the opportunity and point out the importance of a station like KBOO.